The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Joining We the People Radio. It is Sunday morning, but I guess you already knew that. It's 8:05, and you probably knew that, too. You are joining your hosts, Elizabeth Woodward.
I didn't know that. I was busy over here hurrying.
Aaron Ryan. And scurry. Bob Martin. Yeah, it's always a scurry first thing in the morning. I mean, I don't know. I think we should give each other a big pat on the back, all three of us, for being here bright and early every Sunday morning.
Yeah, nice job, Bob. And you actually do something technical, so you get all the
kudos.
We
just slide into our seats and talk at each other like we always do.
Exactly.
Not easy to do something technical this early on a Sunday morning.
You know what? Seriously, just to be honest about it.
Yeah.
If the show was at 11, I'd still be firing in here.
Sure. And really, what difference does it make that it's Sunday? How is Sunday different than any other day, really?
Sunday is usually kind of a do-nothing day.
I know.
And all those people who work on Sunday, I'm super sorry, but you know what? It's kind of been a do-nothing day for me.
So why?
Like going to church was like the hardest thing, and then, you know, it's kind of a bonus being Catholic because you could go on Saturday.
Yeah.
So you could literally scribble off the entire day.
Yeah, that could be nice.
No longer.
So while you are joining...
Productivity has found me.
Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460. If you want to jump on our chat room where we are, well, chatting and streaming live as well.
We're trying to get there, though.
We're going to wethepeopleradio.us, and that is the webpage where everything about today's guests and every guest we've had for the last 2 years is located on that webpage, and you can join us on the chat room there. And we're streaming live everywhere. We have friends all across the country.
We do. You know, I'm constantly
and even other continents.
I'm constantly running into people, though.
Yeah.
That are like, oh, that was such a great show the other day. And I was up in Scott Valley last week before. And a lady that I don't know very well, she goes, yeah, that day that you guys didn't have a guest and you were just talking about nothing. I'm like, oh, you caught that one, did you? She's like, yeah, it was pretty funny. You were, as soon as I turned it on, you were committing journalistic malpractice because you had no proof for what you were talking about. I go,
oh.
Yeah, it's not your average show.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have a template
like,
that
now
we
you
follow.
You know what I do in my free time.
We don't have a template. We just kind of fly by the seat of our pants.
But hello.
Who was accusing us of journalism?
Journalism.
I was throwing around the term journalistic malpractice.
And journalism, I don't know.
I'm not sure I would want to be identified with today's journalists.
I was going to say use that term loosely.
So maybe journalistic malpractice is when you actually have facts. I could have been.
Oh.
I could have been backwards on the reverse of the reverse.
Journalistic malpractice is when you have an opinion and you pretend it's
a George Orwell book.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, okay, hold on. I have a news flash. Okay,
what?
Laying in bed last night.
As were we all.
Yeah, but it was kind of early. It was 11-ish.
Oh, that is early
right?
for you.
Okay, so William Jasper was on there. The editor-in-chief of New American Magazine.
Okay.
Who is awesome, and I've been trying to get him on the program because I met him like 2 years ago at a Eagle Forum conference.
Mm-hmm.
Super smart guy. He was at the 1992 Rio de Janeiro summit.
Okay.
Anyway, cool guy. And their whole show last night on Coast to Coast was about Agenda 21, right?
Oh, nice.
Okay, so I'm like listening along. I'm like, I really want this guy on the program. Why doesn't he needs to write me back, you know? And I kind of haven't been dogging him. I kind of did for a little while and I forgot about him.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm like, oh, I got to get up and put that on my list. And then, it wasn't George Norrie, it was the other guy,
guy with the really deep voice.
Oh, yeah.
And,
he's so cool.
Yeah. And so that guy, he goes, okay, our next guest for the next 2 hours is Rosa Corey.
Oh, nice.
She was awesome.
Oh, my
George,
God.
George Knapp?
No, it was John something or other.
See, you know what's really...
Okay.
That guy. You know, the guy with the roller
But you course. Know what's great about this is that Agenda 21 used to be the tinfoil hat theory.
Well, it was on Coast to Coast, so I guess I'm not sure we could prove it's not.
I know, but Coast to Coast is, in its own way, is more mainstream. I mean, everybody knows what it is.
Millions of people listen to
it. My point is that this is starting to hit the mainstream.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the airwaves that most people are listening to.
Yeah, she was
awesome. I mean, they can't keep it under wraps anymore. How cool is that?
So she was on there for 2 hours last night. So I ran out and, you know, so of course I didn't get any sleep then because I'm all awake then. So I listened to her till like, I ran out and sent her an email. Hey, I'm listening to you on Coast to Coast, you know.
Nice.
So for all the Rosa Corey fans out there, she's been on this program too. And if you look
three
for
times.
Her last name is spelled K-O-I-R-E.
Yeah.
So kind of
And if you haven't heard of Rosa Corey before, she is the one that blows the myth about the Tea Party completely out of the water, that the Tea Party is, you know, homophobic, racist, Republican, blah, blah, blah. She is a lifelong Democrat.
And considers herself to be, you know, really liberal on
very
social
liberal.
Issues. Hey, Robert said in the chat room that he recorded it last night. Oh, yeah, because he says, yeah, Bill Jasper was at the 2011 Eagle Forum Conference.
Nice.
See, we were all listening to Coast to Coast last night.
Nice.
Everyone who was listening to Coast, raise your hand.
Oh, there you go.
Look at that. That's
okay,
awesome.
And while you're at it, everybody smile.
Yeah, really blink twice for yes. We have them all hostage in the studio. Hey, so this morning we are going to speak with Bev Ekman, Beverly Ekman. I always want to call her Bev. I think that's how she signs her emails. And I'll give you a little scoop on Beverly. She has been on our show, actually, in February. She did a nice little series for us. She was an educator for 9 years in English, literature, and debate. I'm going to fast forward. She wrote English grammar curriculum for foreign students. She has a Bachelor of Science in Education at Texas Tech. Did graduate work at Irvine and the University of Houston, not simultaneously, I'm assuming. Science and technical writer, editor-in-chief of NASA's official newspaper. The old NASA, that's back when they did science and they were like going to space and all that good stuff.
And they are now...
Now they
just collecting.
No, now they're promoting harmony with the Muslims.
Oh, that's right.
What a great
that's
job
right.
for NASA.
That's
huh?
right.
Her biggest feature when she was writing for NASA was David the Bubble Baby, a behind the scenes look at space technology and medicine. So she was a speechwriter for Chief Justice Warren Burger, and she just did a whole bunch of stuff. So she has written a book. We knew it was coming, and yesterday I was like, hey, I wonder what Beverly's doing. She has written a book called Agenda Games.
Da, da, nice. Da, da.
Then Coast to Coast was all about
nice.
Agenda 21. I know. It was like great timing. So what do you think? Do we have Beverly on the line?
Yes, we do.
Miss Beverly, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well,
good morning.
So
good morning. I can't hear you real well.
All right, we're going to be fiddling with that because all of a sudden everything else got really loud
for me. Okay, here's the
What'd
deal.
What'd you do, Bob?
I have to turn up the headphone volume so that Beverly can hear us better, but I'm blasting you guys out in the process. So turn your headphones down.
The only knob in this entire room I know how to work is the one for my own headset. And there's like, uh-oh, now I can't hear anything.
Uh-oh. Now, occasionally it happens when the host, you know, that's interviewing me comes on, but and then yet it's fine in the when the person, you know, actually calls me first, initially.
So how long have you been working on Agenda Games?
Oh, it took me nearly a year.
Cool. And you did you learn anything new while you were? I mean, I know you were doing, you know, you were into work that you knew already. You had information
really soft
about.
Now.
Oh, sorry.
Just a second. I'm going to try turning my hearing aid up a little bit, see if or differently.
Okay.
Da-da-da.
We'll wait for you.
Multiple hearing challenge.
You let us know
that's
when
Peter
we're talking
Sellers
too
for
loud.
Challenge.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460.
Okay, let's try that.
I can filibuster while we wait.
Joyce, he's
sorry about that.
That's okay. Quite all right.
We were here goofing off.
Okay, I'm doing better now.
Oh, okay, cool. You have multiple hearing options, as do we. Okay, so we have to take a really quick break, but before we do, Beverly, what is the most important thing in Agenda Games that you think people need to know?
I'm sorry, but you're fading out completely again.
Uh-oh. We're going to
call we'll take a break, and then we'll figure it out.
We're going to call you back during the break. How's that? And we'll try this again.
Why don't you do that? And I can give you even another number. It's a cell phone, though. I don't think you'd like that.
Nope.
As well as this.
Hold on, and Bob will pick you up on the other side of the music.
Okay.
Hang with us. All right,
yeah.
Folks, we're going
to... I'll stay a little over to make up for it.
Yeah, you will. We're going to count on that. all of our guests are so close to hostage-taking. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Lies, lies, I can't believe a word you say. Lies, lies, are gonna make you sad someday. Someday you're gonna be lonely, but you won't find me the crowd. Lies, lies, are breaking my heart.
We're back. Joining Beverly Ekman. She's written a new book.
Yeah.
Agenda Games. So, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
Great.
It's a little soft, but yes, I can hear you.
Awesome. So,
like a Verizon commercial.
So, take her away, Beverly.
Except for that coughing,
well,
sorry.
It took me about a year to write this. It was based upon a three-part series I did called The Agenda Games for American Daily Herald, and then the publishers said, you know, election's coming up, et cetera, et cetera, and we could use more of what you had in How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics, but showing how games are played out in different forums. And I thought about that for a while, and it was definitely doable, but you had to set it up, of course, and make people understand the various forums in which this can take place. And so what I decided on was healthcare, budget, national security, criminal justice, education, political campaigns, green energy, and family values. And so what the idea is that Americans are being played in a high-stakes game to destabilize the nation. What foreign policy experts like to call regime change is coming to America, and the average constituent is caught up in this game of political maneuvers. And what I detail is highly reminiscent of a Stalinesque, as I call it, scheme perfected in the old Soviet Union to first extinguish old loyalties so that they don't exist anymore and then replace them with new thinking. And, of course, that has to be done over a number of years, which it has been, fortunately, because it's been very advantageous to the left because of the schools. Those have been set up since the 50s at least, actually before that, but nobody really could see it until the late 50s. And so that was a perfect brew, shall we say. The ground had been laid for that sort of thing. So what is going on is a formula of diversion, distraction, and disinformation by a new breed called perception managers, and they really are called that. You can look on the DOD, Department of Defense website, and they will talk about perception managers. You could even type that word in once you get to the website. And they use 21st century technological capabilities to mold public opinion. And the enablers and employers, not just within the Justice or the DOD, Defense Department, but other things like the Justice Department and so on, and the Education Department and whatnot, they are very well connected cabal of now entrenched, if not exactly concealed, old Marxists and behavioral experts and world government advocates, global financiers, and of course the United Nations that really got a toehold over here by the 70s and 60s and 70s. They were blowing up campuses and police cars, calling police pigs, this, that, and the other. And so that really set the tone for this. But today's overarching agenda is a redistributed regimented, and regulated U.S. And the end game, of course, is passed off as altruistic, but it places a dictatorial elite at the head of local, national, and world affairs. And the end game is really a U-turn from the nation's founding ideals, especially values such as self-reliance, self-determination, and rugged individualism, which already are characterized as antisocial and dangerous. Every time you hear them, people are supposed to laugh and say, oh, that's a loner. Oh, you have to be worried about people like that. So only sporadic infighting among the elite occasionally results in the ejection of somebody in the inner circle from their vaunted status. And they have to, by law so far, pretend that there is at least a modicum of popular consensus in order to pass legislation or take legislation to state and local legislators for approval to change things. But that is being very, very well choreographed, Policy Association, American Policy Association. They hire political science graduates right out of college with liberal and leftist political leanings and send them into local communities, and they start turning everything around using the Delphi technique and other techniques to convince people that they want to, say, get rid of their big cars, or that they want to have HOV lanes, or that they want to have certain periods of brownouts, and you know, things like that that really they don't want, but they're talked into. And then, of course, there's the campaign of grueling harassment and bankrupting fines and regulatory demands that and marginalization that keeps people in line. And I go into case studies. I do actual case studies in the book. They are examples of this in every single one of these forms, like healthcare, budget, national security, criminal justice, and so on. By the time you get around to Chapter 7, you're recognizing the techniques. You're seeing it. You're saying, wait a minute, I've read about this before. It was just in another forum. So if you know what to look at, if you know what you're looking at, these are recognizable plays. And regardless of political party, every contender for public office or political appointment is getting sucked into this. They cannot escape this kind of thing because they have to give a little to the party, like the National Governors Association, for example. They've got to play along. Romney, whom, of course, is better than Barack Obama, perhaps, but he still has to endorse things like smart growth, green energy, and so on and so forth, to a certain extent, because if he doesn't, he's suddenly going to lose his party support, and they're going to marginalize it. They'll find some picky little thing and focus on it, and then it'll get big play in the media, and suddenly he'll be a dead duck. And we have seen this happen to candidates over and over. For instance, Pat Buchanan, you know, he was thrown off the air of MSNBC after saying virtually the same thing since the 1970s. He hasn't changed his tune any. He's still saying the same things. But they decided they could get away with it, and they didn't really need his huge political base of conservatives. I mean, he was the token conservative at the time, and they needed his base. But, hey, they decided they can do without him now because they're big enough and strong enough. The left is big enough and strong enough. Same thing with Herman Cain. They found some picky thing that made it look like he was having an affair with some woman, but it's very normal for African-Americans who have made it in the business world to help less fortunate people they know, especially women who are, you know, black women who don't succeed as easily as they might. So it is not unusual at all. Bill Cosby fell into this, too, and was accused of all kinds of ridiculous things. But when he came out with that speech to the NAACP, that was politically incorrect, and they decided, well, they couldn't really trash Bill Cosby. He's a beloved figure, but they could do something else. So this is the kind of thing that is going on, and it's very much like what happened under Stalin in communist Russia. We're seeing the same games played. If you get the book that I refer to in my book, called Young Stalin and The Court of the Red Tsar, and both are nonfiction, but you can't put it down. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating how Stalin used the force of personality. He really was the first one to do it. Because Lenin was not a personality boy, Marx was not a personality boy, and none of the Chinese were personality boys. Pol Pot was not a personality boy. None of these, the Japanese emperor, when they bombed Pearl Harbor, was not a personality boy. Mm-hmm. So really, the first person to try to use the force of personality to pull off these kinds of things was Stalin. And he did a very good job of it, and that's kind of been the model of political campaigns ever since in the free world.
Gee, that's comforting.
Yeah, this is a lot to swallow,
yeah.
Right? I mean, to throw at you, I should say, not to swallow. But once you realize, people know things are wrong. I mean, you can listen to the campaigns, and whether you like Ron Paul, for example, or not, I mean, I have issues with some of his policies, but at least you know what you're getting, and he's honest. I mean, but look at the amount of money he raised. It was huge, and he's not even in the debates. I mean, something is definitely wrong with the American system when a person that has raised that much money and has that much following is not even among the debaters.
Mm-hmm.
And people that went down this year to the Republican National Convention said that they pushed through rule changes and that weren't even discussed beforehand. They just pushed them through, gaveled them through, if you will. And so something is definitely altering the entire political landscape. And now I'm getting, just the other day, I think it was 2 days ago, I used to work in the Justice Department, and you can tell your audience, I'm sure you have my bio in front of you, but I used to work for the Justice Department, and I just received information that the training manuals in the FBI are purging everything concerned with national security for the new trainees that are coming in, and that some retired FBI agents blew the whistle. And it hasn't even hit the paper yet. It will.
Why would they do that?
Good question. I mean, some things you don't know, except that we, I think, are experiencing regime change in America. This has all the earmarks of regime change. And that's why I wrote Agenda Games.
So it's more than, I mean, the agenda goes... is shot through, and not just for like environmental and that sort of thing. I mean, it's a much wider definition of agenda.
I'm having trouble hearing you again. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. It's a much your definition of agenda is a much wider version than just the global governance Agenda 21.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, Agenda 21 is a UN, United Nations construct that applies more to housing, where people live, how to keep track of them, how to, surveillance, and, of course, property rights. And it's focused around those two areas, or I guess I could say three areas. But this is a wider thing. And when you talk about an agenda, you're really talking about any kind of plan. And so I call this Agenda Games because these are more strategies or techniques. And they are called agendas, too, when you just are bandying the term about in average conversation, then agenda can be, you know, a moderator of a meeting comes in and sets an agenda, say on the chalkboard or something, we're going to talk about this, 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 and this. And that's where they try to keep people on message so that they don't get into other issues. So that's one use of the word. But when you're talking about the overarching agenda of something and you're talking about hidden agendas, then you're kind of talking about end games. You're talking about the purpose behind all the other things that are going on and all the other things we are seeing. I mean, for example, surveillance cameras. They're called traffic cameras. They started out being called traffic cameras. They're still called traffic cameras. But even when you turn on TV shows like, oh, say, NCIS, a lot of people watch that. They don't call them that anymore. They call them surveillance cameras. We are getting
acclimated. Do they really?
Wow.
I didn't know that
term. So that is an agenda. The agenda is surveillance. The technique is the camera.
Sure.
Wow.
That makes it a little clearer.
Yeah, I need to get out more. I didn't know they were calling. I mean, like, I didn't know that. I don't watch NCIS. I need to get up to speed.
Do they have cameras everywhere you are?
Yeah, they do. They do have them everywhere.
They have red light cameras everywhere we are in this town.
I figured they did. In a big, you know, any big city. Now, there are a few that don't. In Delaware, for example, many of the beach towns don't have them yet. But you can see the cabling starting to be built, and they will. Eventually they will. And then all your smart cards, including key cards to get into the restroom. I mean, if you've got a key card, if you've got a smart card, if you've got an easy pass, any of these things, yes, in themselves, they do serve a purpose and are, I guess you would say, convenient.
Sure.
Up to a certain level, until you realize that all that information can be crunched, as they say in computer language, and that it can be linked. The thing is, people think, oh, well, that means one super-duper big computer. No, you don't have to have that. Because it is now the law, and it has been since 1976, when it started being dreamed up how to do it. And there was a big paper written in 78 on it, and it came out of the Education Department, which is one reason I wrote a book called Microchipped, How the Education Establishment Took Us Beyond Big Brother. They were the first ones to do this, to learn how to link disparate pieces of information. And one of the ways they did it was by a regulation demanding that all state and local computers, if they receive so much as a dime, even indirectly, of federal money, become compatible with federal databases. In other words, they talk to each other, and they have to be able to talk to each other, ostensibly to catch criminals, ostensibly to make investigations easier. Of course, it didn't do much for 9/11, but even at 9/11, we found out about the term data mining following 9/11. And what I showed people just 2 weeks ago in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, was where I launched this book, Agenda Games. I showed them visual evidence that that term, data mining, originated in the Education Department. That's where they learned how to do it, collecting information on school kids under the umbrella of standardized testing. And they interspersed enough personal questions among that they didn't even call it testing anymore. They called it assessment to cover their legal behind.
Nice. That's not the first time we've heard that.
Yeah.
We've got to take a really quick break, Beverly.
I showed them the definitions of assessment.
We will be right back with you. We've got to take a really swift break here. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Jack talking.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Dominance. Submission. Dominance. Submission. Dominance. Submission.
Yeah, I don't know that those are words we like to hear. Is that Blue Oyster Cult?
That is indeed Blue Oyster Cult.
Wow. Very cool. She makes you wonder what they were thinking when they wrote those songs.
Well, they were thinking that later we'd need it for bumper music, and you know, they knew the government. They knew the government was coming after us, and we'd need some good music.
A lot of prescient songs in the 70s.
Yeah, so that people wouldn't be freaking out. Yeah, yeah. You wonder because, like Beverly was saying, in the education field, you know, back in the 70s, a lot of these things started coming to light. So we interrupted you, Beverly.
No, that's okay.
Motor on.
She was grooving to Blue Oyster Cult.
But actually, speaking of music, I mean, John Lennon's Imagine. I mean, it's a popular, very popular song, and it's still played all the time.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the words very, very carefully, you wonder what happened to them. I mean, somewhere along the line, it got away from I Want to Hold Your Hand and into Imagine There's No Country, Imagine There's No Religion, Nothing to Fight or Die For, and No Religion To, No Heaven or Hell. No, I mean, if you listen to the words really carefully, you see that we're being brought into new thinking. And I think somebody got a hold of them. I mean, at some point in time, they were still young, and it wouldn't be hard to turn somebody who's already full of themselves at that point anyway. They had a fan base that, let's face it, when you get to that level of popularity, it's not difficult to plant a few more seeds and to stroke a young person's ego into saying, hey, you know, you can do a lot for the world if you just this, that, or the other. And they get to believing their own press. And this is part of what Stalin did, too. You just have to look at the techniques. Quit looking at the man. Quit looking at whether it was called communism or whatever it was called. You look at the techniques, and that's what's scary when I start looking at the techniques.
That's, you know, it's interesting, but we have been looking at this for a long time.
Yeah, I have been. And it was really kind of accidental when I started. I'm from Washington, D.C., but and that gave me, well, you know, you live in this part of the country, and especially in this smaller area of the seat of government, and so you hear government, government, government every single day and what everybody's doing that passes over and passes by some of the rest of the country. And you get used to how people, as they say, inside the beltway, think. And so I wound up in my college days in Lubbock, Texas. And that's a long story I won't go into. Mm-hmm. But it was amazing to me when I went there. Now, it's a big, big college. Now, it was a big college then, but it has, you know, it's a recognizable college now. You say Texas Tech, and most people know, have heard of it at least. Back then, not necessarily. And here were all these farm kids, basically, that had never been anywhere outside their own little town. And they were getting professors that had obviously been highly trained and recruited in sociology, in anything social science-wise, history, that sort of thing, they were being turned against family, tradition, religion, and especially in psychology classes. When I say Department of Education in that sense, I mean the education department that is inside the university to train teachers. And those teacher training institutions within every college and university, including Texas Tech, They were all about psychology. They didn't care whether we knew anything about the value of X. They did not care whether we knew anything about our subject. All they wanted you to do was to, quote, be relevant, but they didn't give you any tools to be cool, to be hip, to be, you know, whatever the word was in that day. They were not interested in your transmitting knowledge. Every course was psychology of some kind, educational psychology, adolescent psychology, child psychology. I mean, just went on and on. And I had to kind of scratch my head. I went into one class, and I think it was, wasn't sociology, I think it was just a history, government class of some kind. And he was, the professor was telling about these kids about how we were going to assassinate Castro and all the plans that he had been an important part of. Plan to take down Castro. And you know, then at that time, I mean, Kennedy and Johnson was in office, and nobody in those classrooms would have known whether he was telling the truth or not. But he was filling up the heads of kids with that kind of thing instead of teaching about how government works, you know, how you get a bill through Congress. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm sitting back and I'm saying, what in the world? And these kids are soaking it up. I mean, they didn't know. And I'd sometimes afterward have a little conversation with some of them, and then they'd go back in and ask some questions too. But it took that, and then I got married, went to California, and I went to the University of California at Irvine to do some graduate work. And of course, we got it really full force there, because Berkeley was in, you know, everybody knew what Berkeley was doing. It was very leftist there. But so was all of the University of California, regardless of which little city it happened to be in. There were many little cities, like University of Maryland is in every little city here in Maryland. So it was not surprising that the professors found every excuse they could to make fun of a radio talk show host that happened to be out there at the time. His name was Joe Pine. And he was in California, and he was conservative, and he was very well-liked because he was funny, for one thing. And then, of course, you had your William Buckleys and all these people that had started magazines and had talk shows as well, or beginning to have talk shows as well in the 70s. And they took every opportunity they could to make fun of him until it caught on. I mean, the kids really were clueless, but these people were well-trained. Yes, they were professors, but they were also change agents. And not every professor becomes a change agent. You're tapped for that. They have to see something in you and send you to places like the National Training Lab, which is run by the National Education Association, before you ever get into that. And then I started finding the books on it. And one thing led to another, and pretty soon I was like a dog with a bone. I couldn't let go of it. I had to find out what the techniques were and just how people could be corralled, especially large groups. And I finally realized that large groups were easier to work with if you're going to do that kind of thing than individuals. It's harder to turn an individual one-on-one because you have a face-to-face, he says something, you say something, you know, and you have interaction. But if you can't have a lot of interaction, if your interaction is limited, where there's a lot of people versus one change agent, actually it makes it easier for the change agent. So I learned a whole lot.
You know, we need to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'd like for you to talk to people about change agents, and I've got a specific example I'd like you to address. We will be back in 2 minutes with Beverly Ekman. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces, smiling faces.
say sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
And that is our new song? Is that our new song, Bob?
I'm not sure if you could make out the lyrics there, but it was nowhere to... Well, let me pull the lyrics up here. Nowhere to hide, nowhere to run. A future mapped out in Agenda 21.
Sustainable growth.
Where did you get that?
Keep going. I can't see the whole thing. It's sustainable growth as...
Sustainable growth as families decay. A generation of children will be taken away.
Wow. What a cheerful song. Now, who wrote that?
Not sure who wrote it, but the artist is Silent Time. Silent Time.
Oh.
Progressive metal band.
Oh, really? Holy cow.
Dun, 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 dun.
I think Words Out.
We'll have to do it again and put the words up for folks, because that's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Beverly, we found a scary song for you, so...
That's what I needed after writing Agenda Game.
Exactly. Well, I hope
you really like that.
Yeah, you know, books don't come with music, but, you know, when you come...
Wouldn't those words be a great opening to a book?
Exactly. So now that you play with us, we found you a new song. Okay, so when you said change agent, all of a sudden all my buzzers went off, because I had this conversation with someone. Okay, Proposition 31 here in California that is supposedly going to put us on a 2-year budget cycle and all these things that the right-wing people want, okay? It's finally going to do some things the right-wing people want. But in a state that's dominated by the left...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Good luck with that, right?
Yeah, got to be careful what you reach for. So this is a proposition... But when you look at the funding was put together, well, $1.555 million for the actual signature gathering was promoted by a Frenchman named Nicholas, and I'm going to spell his last name. It's Berggruen. Obviously,
sounds Norwegian.
Obviously not being French, I don't know how you even say it. I was going to say Berggruen, but the Nicholas Berggruen Institute. Now, if you go to just their front page, you can see they have the 21st Century Council. This is their website, their description of themselves. Global leaders, global thinkers. Now, I'm already freaking out at that point.
Yep.
Oh, but wait.
Are those the functions? Those are your giveaways right there.
Oh, no. No, the third item. You got global leaders and global thinkers, and you're like, oh, I know who they are. Uh-uh. Change agents and advisors at large. They list themselves as change agents.
That's unusual, actually.
I thought that was bizarre.
Like the American Planning Association, which is one of these change agent groups that go into, that send people out into small communities, they have said don't call yourselves change agents. In their glossary, they said that was a no-no word because people have figured that one out. And in fact, I don't know, about 15 years ago, they were saying make it look like the right wing just thought that expression up, because we're not going to call ourselves, they'll call themselves agents of change sometimes. But where I found out, and in fact, I even fell into that and thought, you know, maybe the right wing did call it that. Maybe the conservatives did think up that name to describe people who do that sort of thing. But then I happened upon a book called Social Psychology and Propaganda, which was at the time classified when I worked at Voice of America, but then it was declassified. Confiscated in Grenada, and it even had the first, it was translated into English, but the first two pages were in Russian, so that you were under no doubt where it came from. And it was confiscated in Grenada and, you know, taken for analysis to the United States, and I happened to have top secret clearance at that time. And so, you know, now it's declassified. But when I first saw it, I thought, something really bothers me about that, because it reminds me of something. I've seen this before, and I don't know where I've seen it, but how could I have seen it if they just confiscated it? Well, then I kind of went home, mulled it over, and it was like light dawned at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I ran downstairs, and I grabbed this book off the shelf that I had gotten to write my first book with, which was called Educating for the New World Order, but that was 1991. I grabbed this book off the shelf. It was from 1976, and it's called, this is the real title, Training for Change Agents.
Wow.
A Guide to the Design and Training Programs for Educators in Other Fields.
Jeez.
And then you look at the first couple of pages, inside pages, and you see that all the contributors to this text are behavioral scientists, as they call themselves, in other words, psychologists with degrees, concurrent degrees in statistics. That's usually what it is. And they're from the Southwest Regional Laboratory, Northwest Regional Laboratory. There's I think, 10 regional laboratories throughout the United States. That may be down to 7 or 8 now. But anyway, you saw all these very liberal groups, and there's page after page of them, actually. And then you look at a random page. I just, you know, opened it up to a random page, and what do I see? Reinforcing existing attitudes, knowledge, and skills in a person. Next subtitle, extinguishing existing attitudes, knowledge, and behaviors in a person. That's just one page, you know, 44. I just happened to open to that page. And I went, whoa, what is this? And then I started reading, and of course, it's a training manual for what Kurt Lewin in Nazi Germany called group dynamics. And so they just went him one better in the Soviet Union and capitalized on that in books like this and Social Psychology and Propaganda. So what else did I see in this book? I opened to the preface, and after I see this list of very important leftists, and I see the contract number for the U.S. Office of Education under Health, Education, and Welfare. The Education Department was not yet a cabinet-level agency. U.S. Department of Health and Health, Education, and Welfare was, and it was part of that instead of being on its own as the Education Department. So now we have Health and Human Services, which takes care of that part of it. We have Education Department, and so we have two. Those are broken now into two separate agencies that are cabinet level. But this contract number means something, and it means that this book, Training for Change Agents, was paid for by our government. And then they say financial support was also provided by the Kellogg Foundation, the Center for Research on Utilization and Scientific Knowledge, Institute for Social Research. Whoops! Where is that, I wonder? And then, of course, they say also U.S. Office of Education, December 1971. But look at this. Institute for Social Research. It didn't hit me at the time because I wasn't reading carefully enough, but right on the cover there's a watermark that says ISR. That's headquartered in Moscow.
Oh, that's relaxing. Okay, Beverly, you are our hostage for 5 minutes. We're going to hear some news, such as it is. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Okay, it's hour two. Hope you filled up the coffee cup, went to the potty, did whatever it is you do.
Whoa, oversharer.
I just wanted to wake everybody up a little bit.
Speaking
That's
of
all.
Speaking
See,
of
look,
full I got, supervision.
Did I totally get a reaction or what?
Yeah.
Don't you love it?
I'm a what? Did she say potty?
I you know me. I aim to entertain.
Bob's over
Not
there.
That we're trying to micromanage your life or anything.
Or anything, yeah.
So whatever it was you did on your five-minute break, you're back and we're back. And
yeah, blink your eyes twice if that was more than you needed.
Or jump on the chat room and tell me.
You're killing me. Yeah, wetheopleradio.us.
Okay.
And that's also where you can forward on the sound file of the program after the program.
Mm-hmm. Every program we've ever done for 2 years is an individual file. You can click on it and email it out to anybody.
Yep.
Anywhere. No excuses.
Which reminds me, our anniversary program is next week.
Yes, with Cameron Gamble, who I've not been able to get a hold of for the last 2 weeks. I needed to make
a
scheduling change.
It's
and, you
hard.
Know, he must be incommunicado again.
It's difficult.
So,
he hides out a lot.
He better be there. Okay, so Beverly, we are talking to Beverly Ekman, author of Agenda Games, and it isn't just Agenda 21. It's literally Agenda Games, people with an agenda. Beverly, we have a question on the chat room. One lady on here asked, do we have surveillance cameras in our houses? I'm presuming she means ones that we don't know about.
They can if they want to, but no. You know, a lot of this, I get questions of, does this mean that everybody is being surveyed every minute of every day? And my answer is no, that's prohibitively expensive, and it's not even necessary. But the point of the exercise is that if you become a nuisance, if you run for public office and they know that you're, say, conservative or you have certain views for that particular office that they don't want, and they don't want you to start padding your resume with conservative credentials and then end up the food chain somewhere to where you can really make their life miserable, they then can do pretty much anything they want to do. There's ways of monitoring your house, for example, that would not entail cameras and thermal devices. And they're long and long range, of course, speech recognition devices that now are sophisticated enough to pick a voice out of a crowd that is all babbling. So it's possible. Technologically, we've got incredible capability now that, of course, Hitler or Stalin or any of those guys would have killed for, no pun intended. But no, to an average person's house, they're not interested. What they are interested in is your kids, and they're interested in what viewpoints these children are developing, especially along trend lines of and when I say that, I mean socioeconomic or demographic belts and blocks. They want to be sure that kids' viewpoints are developing in a more socialistic way, like individualism and things of that nature. They do not want them developing along those lines. They want a mentality set that is high regulation, and that they, where children will develop in such a way, oh yes, we need to have backpacks checked. We need for everybody to be patted down. We need for everybody's underwear to be checked for, you know, drugs, you know, an aspirin, whatever. And they are doing this kind of thing, and they're doing it randomly. You know, if somebody doesn't like another kid, they might say, oh, hey, she's carrying drugs. And I have actually heard of cases, one was in Arizona, I believe, where they made this A student, that never caused a bit of trouble, strip in front of the school officials down, including her underwear, taking off, just looking for emotion.
Jeez.
Hey, so Beverly,
I mean, but you're supposed to be used to and accustomed to this.
Now, Beverly,
if they do it long enough, that'll be okay.
Beverly, I got a quick question. I mean, we're talking about surveillance, and you have to wonder how far the tentacles reach into the private sector. For instance, I went to Lowe's Home Improvement store earlier this week. And I had one item, and I was going through the self-checkout, and all of a sudden I noticed that they've got cameras at every checkout stand in the self-checkout, along with a mirror. So I look up and I see myself, which isn't something I necessarily need to do. And there's a camera. And there's a camera there.
Amen to that, sister.
Yeah, man. And there's a camera filming me while I'm checking out with my purchase.
Yes, that's in most stores.
Why?
Because then if a crime occurs anywhere, now this is their logic, their justification.
Yeah, exactly.
If a crime should occur during the period where you happen to be in the store, then everything that goes on, they can run that film and maybe catch something, not necessarily you, maybe something in back of you.
So how is it
something you never even saw?
But how is it this?
That's what supposedly they're looking for, or at least where you were at that time. Say you are accused of a crime, and you say, "No, I was at Lowe's." They'll say, "Fine, we'll go check it," and then they'll see you on camera, and you're cleared. So yes, it's a double-edged sword. But as you know, and here's where the rubber hits the road, if they want to put a clip in a different sequence, take it out of one camera and place it in a different way, I mean, they can make it look like Arnold Schwarzenegger's head is on somebody else's shoulders. They can do that.
How did they get
really
to the private sector?
If they really want to get you, they can get you.
But how? I mean, I assume that this drive to surveil everyone originally comes from the government. How did they get into Lowe's? How did they get so far into the private sector? How did they get Lowe's on board with this?
What happens is contractors say, and I know this is the truth on the road and highway, so it probably is true in other places too. In fact, I know it is. They say, look, we will put and run for you X number of cameras and give you a cut of however much you make off, you know, catching thieves, catching speeders, catching whatever. And it's a win-win situation for the government, because then they don't have to put as many of, say, the county. Because the county is government, too. People forget about that when you hear the word government. They're all linked in some way. And they're all accepting federal dollars in some way. That means that they don't want to be without those federal dollars. And so if government wants to put a camera in there, and the camera nearly everywhere, they can do it, and it's a win-win situation for them, because they get a cut. The company that's putting in these cameras and making them dual-use cameras, essentially, or maybe even triple-use. Now I'm seeing speed cameras also being used as surveillance cameras on a corner. They look a little different than the old style speed cameras, and they're on corners, sometimes hidden halfway around bushes, and I just noticed some of those going up, and you kind of have to look twice to see them, because, you know, there's poles everywhere, and you never are sure which is which, but if you really look, you're going to notice some of these things that you've never seen before. But there's an advantage to government, so that they don't have to hire full-time guys, say, to stand along, stand outside your store. Or the store doesn't have to pay for somebody to maybe stand right there catching as many people, catching, you know, security guards. They don't have to pay for as many of those, because they can see the crime on camera. Now, maybe they can't send somebody in fast enough to stop the crime, but, hey, they don't care about the people. They don't care about somebody who may be shot in the process. They care about holding something over somebody's head, and they care about getting the technology in there. Then afterwards, they can worry about what to do with the technology and how they want to use it. Once the camera's in, it's in.
Sure, it's like spreading the net on the floor of the jungle. You know, the guys run through, you pull the rope, whoosh, you get them all.
Yep, there you go. And give you an example. In Britain, they're doing going far and away above where we are. They have cameras in London hidden behind bushes and so on, attached to buildings and whatnot, that are looking at sidewalks. They're not looking at streets particularly, they're looking at sidewalks. If somebody drops a paper wrapper, suddenly out of a megaphone shouts, "Pick up that wrapper!"
No.
I'm not kidding.
What?
I promise you, that is really true.
Man, I would just litter like a big dog.
It's a harassment technique, but once the first shock of that is over with, people become complacent. As long as people aren't being stood up against a wall and shot,
yet
they're willing to give up their rights piecemeal.
Jeez.
Just to avoid a conflict.
Yeah.
You know, we've been taught since we were little kids in school, by the way, notice, in school, that making a scene is not a good thing. That standing up and saying things and just complaining about something in general is not good form. You don't cause a conflict. You just put up with it and you go on about your business. You don't say something every time there's something you don't like. And so since we've been given this kind of conflict resolution, if you will, and we've been taught that, hey, you know, if we have an opponent or somebody steals our toy, we're not to make a big issue of it. That's all part of the conditioning that we are receiving, and someday it's going to backfire.
We're planning on fighting it all the way and being snarky about it while we do it.
Absolutely.
That's our plan.
That's our job.
We're just going to make fun of them until they submit.
I call it climate control. It's building a psychological environment.
Well,
and you don't realize the psychological environment has been built until someday it's your ox that's being gored.
Sure. And I mean, once you start as a people, once you start legislating personal responsibility, it is a fairly, I don't even know if it's a slippery slope, but what's faster than the slippery slope, I guess? It's more like getting pushed out of a plane. You're just in free fall.
It is at this point. It was a slippery slope back in the 70s. What conservatives really blew it when they didn't start buying up media and when it was cheap, and getting themselves on the boards of various newspapers. That's what they should have done. And then when they did start radio and TV shows, and I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about way back,
sure,
in the 70s and so on, they would call themselves the Christian Network or something. Did they think the CBS called themselves the Marxist Network? I mean, are we stupid?
Well, there is the Communist network, the CNN.
They don't ever refer to themselves as leftists or Marxists or whatever they actually are, in fact, or socialist network. They never say that.
True.
But we label ourselves, and then we wonder why the left labels us. Well, we've already given them the label. Hello?
In fairness to those people, back in pre-1988... whether they had to be under the banner of Christian radio or whatever, because of the fairness doctrine, conservatives were not free to broadcast their views on the radio like they are today prior to Ronald Reagan's repeal of the fairness doctrine in 1988.
The fairness doctrine was definitely aimed, and it was fought by conservatives, and of course every time it was fought, the liberal papers like the Washington Post and so on would say, "Oh, see, the conservatives are against fairness," and so of course they call it something like the fairness doctrine. And you have something like the New Freedom Initiative, the latest iteration of that, and it's actually a plan to screen the entire population for mental health. And if you start reading the books on it, well, you know, the Republican Brain. You better get that book, The Republican Brain. It's by Chris Mooney. And, well, it's defective, I got to tell you. Your brain is defective. And a lot of studies that were paid for with federal dollars, by the way, and went through universities and so on, have lots of PhDs attached to them. Well, you've got faulty wiring in your brain. It's probably hardwired. There's nothing you can do about it, and you're just dogmatic, authoritarian, and, you know, that's it. And so this book, The Republican Brain, outlines all this stuff, and people are actually believing it because these people have all these PhDs after their name. This is going to fly in our face, and if we think it's not, we're dreaming.
Sounds like climate change. Say it often enough makes it true. Hey, do you want to hang
with us
through the break, Beverly?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to hang with us through the break?
Okay. One more second.
Okay. We'll be right.
Then I got to get back to work.
Beverly is truly our hostage. We will be back with Beverly Ekman here at We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Poets, priests, and politicians.
Sung by The Police. Interesting little coinkydink there, don't you think? Hey, so Beverly, you want to give us a promo on your new book?
Oh, okay. I launched it officially in Madison, Wisconsin, September 15th, and it's now available on Amazon and some, you know, other retail outlets, and Amazon, of course, is where everybody seems to go. The publisher is Midnight Whistler, so you could go to www.midnightwhistler.com and get it that way if you wanted to. And you can go to my website, beverlye.com, but it's being reconfigured as we speak, but it's up and you can access it, and you'll see the flyer that we did for that book on the 15th at the speaking engagement. Actually, I did a back-to-back speaking engagement. So Agenda Games is really important for the election, but it's got, you know, shelf life beyond that, because the games that are being played, I use real-life examples to show these, and like I say, by the time you get to Chapter 7, you're pretty well starting to be able to pick them out and recognize them before, you know, just as I start to describe something. But I am using several different venues. I start out with healthcare because that one has it has Agenda Games written all over it. And in education, I explain how to help kids avoid groupthink and why, how warfare and high-stakes political combat, this is what we're really experiencing. It's not a shooting war. Mm-hmm. It's political combat. And why Americans are really in the middle of these being used as pawns in these political maneuvers. And I show how the health care bill, for example, they used the technique, or the agenda game, if you will, of distraction. Sometimes they use disinformation, sometimes it's distortion, but in this case it was distraction with that contraceptives for everybody thing, and it was very curious, too, because it had already passed the House and Senate, the Obamacare, and why would they, you know, start something like that and leave themselves wide open to criticism when they had already, it had already passed the House and Senate? Well, the reason was Obama knew that they were about to get a Supreme Court case thrown at them from Florida. And it was being launched against HHS, Health and Human Services, and he was afraid the whole Obamacare thing would then be turned on its head and go down the drain, be declared unconstitutional. So he was afraid that the basis that they would do that on, and they should have, actually, was the Commerce Clause, the illegal, constitutionally illegal use of the Commerce Clause. So to distract from that, he pulled this thing like rabbit out of a hat and said, oh, contraceptives for everybody, free contraceptives for women, and he put it under reproductive health. Well, of course, it caused a predictable firestorm. Everybody, especially the religious leaders and whatnot, started, oh, this just violates our conscience, and this is like regulating morality or immorality, if you will, and giving license to illegitimacy and pornography and the whole ball of wax if you give these contraceptives to everybody and make it free. Well, without even mentioning the fact that, by the way, most people that can't afford them already get them free. I mean, health clinics are already giving them free. Well, now you've got 14-year-olds getting them free from New York City schools. Yes, they get them anytime they walk up to the school nurse, and that's young girls, the morning after pill. So anyway, the bottom line was they were fighting and fighting and fighting over this free contraceptives thing, and so the whole paper was filled up with it, and nobody mentioned the Commerce Clause. So finally, the Supreme Court case does occur, and as everybody knows now, Chief Justice Roberts just retooled this a little bit. He should have handed it back to Congress if it wasn't perfect and said rewrite it. Instead, he says it is not the job of the court to reverse the results of, I'm not saying this exactly right, of the people's electoral choices. It's not their job to, they need to elect different people if they want different outcomes. That's basically what he was saying. And who knows what kind of pressure Chief Justice Roberts was really under during that whole thing, and why he didn't just invoke the Commerce Clause and instead of calling it a tax or something like that and letting it go. And letting it go and pass free. Well, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer because football stars are getting death threats for less than was at stake on something like Obamacare. So, you know, here he is. It's not a right-wing court. It is not a conservative court. It is mostly just a couple, two or three, that are really conservatives, and the rest lean leftward. Either all leftists or leaning leftward. And so that doesn't give us a lot of wiggle room. So he just passed a buck. Yes, he went rogue, sort of. He didn't do what was expected. But he gave us a message. And he didn't have to tack on that sentence to his conclusion, to his decision, when he said that it is not the job of the court to, you know, make up for the electoral choices of the people. So he's saying, hey, you know, you have messed around, or saying to the American people, basically, you've messed around with socialism long enough. If that's the kind of leaders you want, then you're going to get socialism. So he did something totally unpredicted, but in fact, he was probably right to do it in that way, and who knows what kind of real pressure he was under if he hadn't done it that way. So that's what you're going to see in agenda games, are those kind of games of distraction, and how they work and how they play out in everything from health care to budget. We don't have we haven't had a budget in 4 years.
Huh,
why haven't we had a budget in 4 years? I mean, we're supposed that by law, it's federal law that you're supposed to have a budget. National security, it's entering the twilight zone, and we're not catching terrorists. TSA is not catching terrorists. I haven't caught a single terrorist. The passengers are catching terrorists. Criminal justice is unable to protect the public anymore. You've got people with long rap sheets trotting all over the country, coming into the country, committing crimes, and then getting reduced sentences and going on to commit more crimes. It's completely out of control. You've got an education system that's out of control. Your energy, we're getting brownouts, blackouts, this and that, because none of the money collected for various fines or whatever is being used to change and improve our infrastructure, which is what we should be doing. We're living with 1940s technology. Why is that? This is the greatest country on earth, and we're living with 1940s technology. And so then how it plays into family values, for example, violent video games. Why aren't they illegal? Why are they protected under free speech? That's ridiculous. I mean, they had clear evidence and gobs of it, and I show it in agenda games. Exactly what all the evidence is, all the court cases about it are that why violent video games should not be given to minors. And, of course, they always are given to minors. The mature audience thing is just a ruse to entice minors to buy them. So you're going to see all of this stuff, and you're going to see what the games are. And by the time you get to the seventh chapter, you're going to be able to pick them out pretty much yourself. But some of them, there is some stuff in here, especially on the case studies in the Green Game, for example, that shouldn't even happen in America. It's so off the wall what happened to this one family named the Hagues, H-A-G-E.
Oh, yeah. Wayne.
It deserves to be, that one deserves to be read if you didn't get to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just, this one is something to study. It's not bedside reading. You probably won't be able to sleep if you do when you pick it up. But I think it's important. We've got to start realizing exactly what we're up against. And you mentioned spying, cyber spying. There is huge section on that with several subsections so that you will understand what tracking versus eavesdropping is and the difference between them. One of your callers just asked that question in essence, and I explain it in this. And the perfect storm for cyber spying, how much of the technology and what it's used for, and how it's, some of it is dual use, and exactly what you can do with it that nobody ever thought of, you know, when it started. In fact, it seemed pretty much like you should have some of this stuff. And then all of a sudden we're thinking, oh my goodness, when the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act started, that's called FISA, F-I-S-A, everybody thought it was a good thing, but wait till you see how it morphed. So that's the kind of thing that you will find in agenda games. And like I say, it's on, my name is spelled E-A-K-M-A-N, so that's kind of a weird spelling, but I think if you just put in agenda games, you would probably get to it and be able to find it on Amazon or a lot of other places.
Well, we put a link
on it. There's going to be a YouTube of me up. An interview from Madison, Wisconsin, pretty soon. It's being edited as we speak, and they're going to put that up on YouTube. And then some of the presentations that I gave in Madison, Wisconsin are going to be on DVD, and I'm going to have up on my website a contact for people to actually get those DVDs that they took at the time. As you know, it even included, it was a PowerPoint presentation, so they have to switch back and forth cameras from me to the PowerPoint slides, some of which I had to have zoom outs so the audience could see the fine print of something. So that takes time to do that. But once they do, it's going to be available.
Nice. We will watch for it. We'll also add it to the webpage. The book is actually on wethepeopleradio.us. There's a link Robert put on there that goes right to the Amazon book link. All right. Well, it's time for another break, so we will not jam you up. We've got
thanks, Bev.
Charles on hold with an example of how this all comes together. So thank you, Beverly Ekman. Have a wonderful day.
I enjoyed it. It was my pleasure to be on, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Beverly. We'll have you on again.
Okay.
Already?
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
I trust the government. Everybody does.
And Billy Joel does, too. We are wrapping it up.
Speaking of that,
yes.
we were talking about
Charles
last
being
hour.
On hold.
Oh, well, yeah, let's get to Charles first. My deal can wait. Charles, thank you for waiting.
Did you see that,
for,
Charles? Charles, Bob tried to blow you off. I saved you.
Charles?
It's possible.
Thank you for waiting for 47 minutes. Go ahead.
Does he really?
Yeah. Here's a local example, and it, on the city council agenda, there's this smoking ordinance that's been the subject of controversy for the past month, and this thing is really being pushed hard by a group calling itself the Tobacco Education Coalition, which is a program of the Public Health Department, and it's being funded by the McConnell Foundation and the Community Transformation Grant Program, which is a program of CDC under the auspices of Obamacare. And what they are doing is, what this group has been doing, is they are trying to make it look like everybody wants this, and the only people who don't want this are just some small, you know, extreme minority group of people who don't count anyway. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they put in the materials they gave to CSAC when they were discussing this back on September 17th, I believe. It was the 17th. No, it was the last CSAC meeting, whenever that was.
So bottom line is they're planning on micromanaging us some more.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the smoking thing. You know, I had this visual when you said that.
Low-hanging fruit.
I was trying desperately not to interrupt, although it's such my flaw. But when you said that about the smoking thing, all I could think of was, the speaker in the bushes. Stop smoking.
Yeah.
You know, the littering voice that they have going on.
Well, and, you know, the thing that that strikes me as so ironic about this, Charles, and I think that I responded to your email with this comment, is how do they really think they're going to enforce this? Are they going to be everywhere at all times making sure that nobody's got a cigarette? I mean, what do they think they're going to do?
Yeah.
Well,
the chief of police already says he's not going to enforce it.
It's unenforceable.
Really?
Pelletti says he's not going to enforce it.
But she said, yeah, he's like, yeah, that's stupid. We're not enforcing it. It's funny,
they don't have the manpower to enforce it.
And I love his pragmatic view. I mean, really, with all of the problems that we have right now, you're worried about that. But, you know, these folks, they need something to do.
Well, I mean, if you look at the, I mean, and one of the things that the Tobacco Education Coalition has been using to promote this is their so-called survey. Now, think about this. If, for example, whatever, you know, Canadian company that is trying to get this pipeline put together, if they were to put together an opinion survey concerning the pipeline, you know, the people on the other side of the argument would be, you know, screaming like a bunch of stuck pigs, saying, "Oh, this is biased. How can you trust the results, etc., etc.?" Because you have a party to the controversy that is strongly desirous of a particular outcome.
Is that like the? Is this the party to whom I am speaking?
Hello.
That was so worth it.
Well, no, you spoke at a really low volume, so I could only hear about half of it.
Now, Aaron keeps fading out today for some reason.
Well, I'm using an old rotary dial phone.
Wow.
Wow. I didn't know. How'd you smuggle that one? Didn't they take all those away from us?
Oh, they still occasionally, you know, occasionally, I found this one at a thrift store years ago.
Nice. I have a little princess phone, you know, that plugs in that just has the little buttons for, you know, in case the power goes out, these stupid cordless phones are worthless.
Yeah, no, this one's an old Western Electric rotary dial phone.
So heavy you could knock out a burglar.
When, you had to pay rent for your phone.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, wow, we're old.
Analog is hip again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Analog's back in. All right,
but
Charles?
They're using this survey.
Analog is
doing
hip.
Doing all these different efforts, getting back to the Tobacco Coalition, using all these to try to manipulate and forge public opinion the way the old-time blacksmiths used to, you know, forge knives. By, you know, trying to bang on hot metal into a particular pattern, trying to make it sound like everybody wants this.
Well, that's about it. Is of course this is good for you. You should do it, and then if you know, I mean, it's kind of
realignment works so well that we can stop worrying about child molesters and drug dealers and exes with axes to grind and all the rest, because now the single solitary cigarette from 500 feet away exceedeth them all.
Exactly. Wouldn't want to have any smoke. All right, Charles.
I feel much better about $5 a gallon gas
now.
Yeah, forget all that. And for those of you...
Some of the people who are supporting this are not even using health arguments like they used to. I mean, I'm not... some of the people who, you know, post comments supporting this are using arguments of personal taste, saying that... In essence, saying, well, you know, I don't want this there because I don't like it, and so I think it ought to be banned, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And so they're trying to legislate personal taste.
All right, and so on that note, Charles, thank you for injecting your personal taste into our...
coming up Tuesday night.
Oh, Tuesday night in Reading at City Council?
Uh-huh.
Right on. Okay, folks, if you think people ought to be able to smoke or do whatever it is they want to do, you should.
It's just the cigarettes are just the low-hanging fruit.
Exactly.
I mean,
they're the ones we love to hate.
Hitler did not go after the Soviet Union before he first attacked Poland and Denmark and Norway.
So this would be more like Norway?
The Japanese did not attack Pearl Harbor before they, almost 10 years before, went into Manchuria. So... you know, they always go after the low-hanging fruit before they go after other things that are harder targets.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. And so if you don't if you don't stop the weed when it's just a tiny little shoot, you know,
you get weeds.
When it's taken over your whole garden with itself and its progeny, you're going to have a much tougher time of things.
Yeah, people don't realize that once they open a door, a crack, they just barrel their way through.
I mean, isn't anybody going to add the one about the camel's nose under the tent?
Uh-huh.
Well, because, okay, so bring your Roundup and plant your flag. We're going to take back Denmark on Tuesday night at the City Council. Thank you, Charles.
Bye.
Yeah.
We're going to take out the weeds.
Yeah, so, first they go after cigarettes, then they go after Twinkies.
And soda. Exactly. And soda. Don't forget soda.
Ooh, big soda. Evil, bad, big soda. Hey, and folks, I would encourage you to go to YouTube and click on Economic Warfare Super Panel. Didn't know there was such a thing. The guy's name is William Scott. I don't know if you could just search that, but it's the title of the video is Economic Warfare Super Panel. And this guy at econwarfare.org, you could probably find it there, goes on about how the new terrorist plan is to start catastrophic wildfires.
I watched that video.
Gee willikers, what a yeah. novel idea. So yeah. you get the Forest Service to let the fuel ladders just, you know, mm-hmm. completely build to a point where these fires can't be fought and adopt a policy of let it burn.
But tell them who's behind this economic warfare.
You do it.
It would be
okay.
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda. And, you know, bottom line is anyone with matches could be behind it.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are playing in, but I didn't really think about it from an economic warfare standpoint.
Yeah, they're here. They're
yeah,
here,
screws
folks.
screws over all the tourism and, I mean, you name it, not to mention all the people whose houses burned down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, and
if you don't think they're here, they're here.
They're here. So,
right. What I was starting to mention before we took Charles
some
there.
Some sort of detour there?
Yes. Yes, which we have been known
ago,
to
before
do.
Before we remembered Charles was on hold.
Yes, and talking about something to do with Billy Joel. But that reminded me last hour, the Billy Joel song that we came
just
in with.
Kidding.
Yes, okay. But that in turn reminded me last hour.
He's trying to make a point now.
Bev,
leave him alone.
Our guest, Bev, was talking about John Lennon's radical songwriting in the early 70s, using Imagine for an example. And I knew this story was out there, and I finally found it. But this came out a little over a year ago. And it was predictably not in the American press. It was in the London Daily Mail. But it says, by the time he died, John Lennon was a closet conservative, embarrassed by his radical past, according to his former personal assistant. Fred Seaman claims that the former Beatle was a fan of Ronald Reagan, who went on to become America's president in 1981 and forge a close political alliance with Margaret Thatcher. Of course, this is written from the UK perspective. Fred Seaman, and I quote, said, John basically made it very clear that if he were an American, he would vote for Reagan because he was really sour on Jimmy Carter. Seaman worked for Lennon during the year leading up to the star's death in December of 1980 at the age of 40. He tells Beatles Stories filmmaker Seth Swirsky that in his final months, Lennon was not the left-wing militant worshipped by many of his fans. Seaman says he was a very different person back in 1979 and 80 than he had been at the time he wrote Imagine. Lennon met Reagan back, I think, in the 70s at some sporting event. Again, this is Fred Seaman talking. Reagan was the guy who had ordered the National Guard, I believe, to go after the demonstrators in Berkeley, so I think that John maybe forgot about that. But he did express support for Reagan, which shocked me. He adds, quote, I also, John, embark in some really brutal arguments with my uncle, who's an old-time communist. He really enjoyed provoking my uncle. It was pretty obvious to me he had moved away from his earlier radicalism.
Nice.
Some food for thought.
Yeah.
Take heart, Beatles fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was true, but, you know, even if it wasn't, wouldn't that be fun? That's a good way to, that's a good way to fight back. We just take away all their icons.
Mm-hmm.
We just say that they were all seriously closet conservatives.
Of course, the left has done its best to discredit that story since
sure.
it
so they already knew my technique?
But Well, I'm reminded of what John Lennon's fellow countryman, Winston Churchill, said. If a man is not a liberal by the age of 20, he has no heart. If he's not a conservative by the age of 40, which Lennon was,
he had no brain. Oh. I was thinking you were going to say never give up.
Well, that's another one.
Hey, so do you have that comedy shtick that you were going to play?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got time for that.
Oh, cool.
Give me just a moment and I'll bring it up here.
I can hear Eddie already. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Sure we do.
Yeah, he says, do I hear a mustard seed story coming? No. Hey, and Robert just brought us back to reality here. Also, we weren't sure how long Beverly was going to be on. So, in light of the election, you know, looming large, we thought people might want information about the California propositions, since there are many. And so we've got that on the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us. And just below the picture of Beverly's book, it says, California residents, do you know your props? And so there are two takes on that. One is from the California Tea Party Coalition, and one is from one of our Tea Party guys down in Corning. She did a really thorough...
That's our friend Patty.
Patty matching up of, you know, what the actual wording of the propositions is and some of the analysis. So I would encourage you to go there, do that, and check it out. Okay. Bob.
Okay, I must confess for...
I love confession.
Alert Casey and our listeners.
Yeah, because she's Catholic.
Laura Ingram actually beat me to this a couple of days ago, but I was already had it in the works for today's show. But when I heard this clip earlier in the week, the first thing I thought of was that Flip Wilson's old character, Geraldine, was alive and well. And
she's hilarious.
So are we getting the real clip or Geraldine
Cleveland
first?
Well, first we've got the real clip here. This was Cleveland earlier this week.
Obama!
You got Obama phone?
Yes! Everybody in Cleveland know my minority got Obama phone. Keep Obama in president, you know? He gave us a phone.
He gave you
he
a phone?
He's going to do more.
How did he give you a phone?
You sign up if you're on food stamps, you're on Social Security, you got low income, you disability.
Hey, I have a question. Okay, what's wrong with Romney again?
Romney, he sucks. Hey!
Okay, that may say something about Obama's
I want a voice
legalized
constituency.
Vote buying.
I want a
voice. That's what it is vote buying, isn't it?
Yeah, I want a voice just like hers. She's got a radio voice, don't you think?
Oh,
she's
sure.
Got a voice made for selling movies.
Oh, she's got a great future in this business. Anyway, it reminded me of this voice, and I'm absolutely convinced, although Flip Wilson passed away several years ago, that Geraldine is alive and well and living in Cleveland.
I talk now. On the television. You look better than that. What are they looking at? I'm talking to you and they're looking at me. That guy there, he tried to come up on the stage a couple weeks ago and manhandle me.
And for that, you can get a free phone.
I saw that woman. She has a face for radio, too.
That's true, too.
Did you notice? Did you see the clip?
Yeah,
the video clip?
Crazed.
You could see her gum. Her mouth was so big that you could see the gum she was chewing while she was
talking.
Oh,
I thought you meant the stuff that holds your teeth on.
No. The gum. It was on her tongue.
Oh, gruesome.
It was gross.
Some good product placement by Dentine there.
Yeah, totally. Holy cow. Okay, and I want to make mention of one more quick thing on the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us. I want you to go on there and look at the Klamath Forest Alliance's True Agenda. We listed all this for you and gave you the original PDF. That is Agenda 21 from a long time ago. For those
folks,
of you that are deniers,
share the information with everyone you know. Check.
All right, see you next week with Cameron Gamble.
And we'll see you at the Tea Party meeting tomorrow night.
Yeah, for...
debate
Elizabeth Ekman, or no, Elizabeth, I'm sorry, that was Beverly Ekman, Elizabeth Emkin,
who's the running senatorial
Diane
candidate.
Feinstein.
And
Diane Feinstein couldn't make it.
She couldn't make an empty chair.
Shocker.
6 o'clock Monday night, Reading.
All right. Thank you, ladies. KCNR, Shasta Reading, Don Shulman, Don and Judy are next.